group, which formalizes a bit the theory of continuous groups that we already saw last time. So last time we were always focusing with continuous groups, groups which have some continuous parameters, some rotation angles or elements which were equivalent. Each element of the group was a point in a sphere. So we were only speaking about continuous groups, groups which are parametrized by some set of continuous parameters. So that's the elements of the group. I can think of them as defining some manifold if you want. Okay, so here's a brief summary of what we have seen yesterday. So I think we saw a bit more than this, but for example, the first thing we saw, or one of the first things, was that the group of rotations in the plane was equal to the group of phases, and both of them were equal to the circle, which is S1. Now, is this relation obvious? Of course. So each phase is just tells me one point in the circle, so of course the group of phases being equal to the circle is obvious. Each rotation in the plane is also parametrized by an angle. I just tell you by how much I rotate, so it's also obvious that the group of rotations is equal to the circle. And again, what do we mean by group? By group, we mean a set of elements with a multiplicative table. So it's a set of elements. Given two elements, I can compose them and get a third element. For each element, there is an inverse. So if I rotate, I can rotate back. And there is a possibility of doing nothing. That is the identity. Okay? So it's a but you really should think of a group as a multiplication table. Something abstract. Here is an element. Here is another element. I compose. I get a third element. Now, very useful concept to think about groups is the concept of representation. So whenever you have a group, you can introduce a map from the group to the matrices. For example, we have an SO2 group. We have a map to the rotation matrix in two dimensions. And that the map of a group to the set of matrices is what is called the representation. And this is especially useful if the representation is what we call faithful. That is, if it contains all the information of the group, such as in this case, for example. I multiply two SO2 matrices, and I see that if I multiply a matrix with theta 1 and the matrix of theta 2, the only thing that happens to this matrix is that theta is replaced by theta 1 plus theta 2. Right? If you multiply, if you do this exercise, I'm multiplying one matrix with theta 1 with another with theta 2, you get a matrix where the parameter is theta 1 plus theta 2. So this tells you the multiplication table of this group. Slightly more complicated example was when we said that SU2 is equal to the 3-sphere. So the 3-sphere is a set of points in four-dimensional space such that the sum of the squares of coordinates is equal to 1. It's the generalization of a 2 or a 1 sphere. And SU2 is the group of the matrices of unit determinants such that U dagger U is equal to 1, and these are what are so-called special unitary matrices. And as you might remember, the way to see this relation was to parameterize the elements of SU2. We introduced some N1 plus IN2, N3 plus IN4, etc. And saw that the condition that the matrix is in SU2 is the same as the condition that those n's which we used to parameterize the group were defined the 3-sphere. Next, we saw that SO3, which is the group of rotations in 3 dimensions, is almost the same as SU2. Not exactly. We have to divide by the cyclic group of order 2. That is, we have to say that SO3 is the 3-sphere, provided N4 is identified with minus N4. There was this stuff that a 4-sphere can almost be thought as a 3-sphere can almost be thought as a 2-sphere plus a magnitude, but a bit more than that, because N4 and minus N4 gave the same magnitude. Concerning representations, the most major representation for SO3 is the 3-dimensional one, where I have vectors of 3 dimension and the matrices are 3-dimensional. And what the representation does is rotates those matrices, those vectors, what these matrices do. And then we consider two such vectors and build out of them a tensor. So we consider 3 times 3 and saw that the product of these two vectors could be decomposed into its scalar part, which was the trivial representation. The vector part, which is the exterior product of two vectors, and the symmetric traceless, which form the representation of size 5. That is, typically, the representations are reducible, and they take this form for any g. If I give you a representation, the typical case is that this representation can be brought to Bloch diagonal term. The blocks where I cannot make more diagonal, these block diagonal parts are what are called the irreducible representations. They are also a representation, because when I multiply two such matrices, A goes to A prime times A, A times A prime is what defines A prime prime, so A is itself a representation, and this is the definition of an irreducible representation, the one which does not have an invariant subspace anymore. Okay? Good. Is everything clear here? Next, we saw that in a more general case, this nth sphere could be thought of as the coset space of SON plus 1 over SON. So this notation means that you have a group, a subgroup of that group, and G over H means the coset space of G under H, okay, which are the sets of elements of the group G which are not related by H. So the sets of rotations in n plus 1 dimensions which are not related by an nth dimensional rotation. In the case of the three sphere, the rotations of the sphere which do not leave the North Pole invariant. If they leave the North Pole invariant, they should be if they are related by a transformation which leaves the North Pole invariant, we said that they should be identified because they would give us the same point of the sphere. Okay? So this interpretation, I could also say that these were the isometry group of the sphere over the isotropy group of the sphere, which was the group which wrote symmetries of the sphere over symmetries which keep one point fixed. Okay? And this was also the space of cosets. Okay? So for each coset, and the coset G, H, was given by the elements GH1 up to GHN. And then we said that the space of cosets, two different cosets, either don't overlap at all, and we have here an element GH and here an element G prime H, or they completely overlap. So we can have a situation where we have here GH and G prime prime H. So either they overlap completely, two cosets overlap completely, or they don't overlap at all. They overlap completely in this case here, which is the case when G prime prime is equal to G times some H, some element of the subgroup, and they don't overlap here when G prime is not equal to G times some H. They are not related. So points all the so this here, any point here is not related to a point there by H. Any G which defines these cosets are not related by G's which define these cosets here. Okay? So this was about cosets. Okay? Then we saw that we could define, in general, SON, SON, N, SUN, all these groups can be defined in a unified formalism. You can think of them. You can define them through a representation, through a faithful representation. In the SON case, it was the vector. In the SUN, it was the fundamental. Which are the rotations, if you want to think, in this more generalized sense, which preserve some inner products. For example, in SON, it was the usual inner product between two vectors, which was just xi, yi. In SON, M is the inner product where you contract the indices with an eta matrix, which can have some minus signs. Eta is the matrix with 1 in the first elements of the diagonal, and then minus 1 over the remaining m elements. Okay? SUN was x dagger y, preserves x dagger y, which is the sum of xi conjugate with yi, sorry. Here, y. It's inner product x and y. And this S here means that the determinant of this matrix, of the matrices which rotate, should be equal to 1. And of course, when we have the metric 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, we are describing usual Poincaré, the usual Poincaré group. Okay. Good. So, this is more or less a summary of what I hope that was clear last time. So, is everything clear here? Yeah? Good. Okay. So, yeah, great. So, let's study in more detail this notion of Lie algebras and Lie groups, which are groups which are parameterized by some continuous parameters. Okay. So now let's consider, if you want to study a continuous group, let's study it close to its simplest point, close to the identity. So a group always has an identity. Let's expand the group elements or the representation close to the identity, close to not doing anything. Okay. I think Nima already went through a bit of this discussion of expanding around the identity and introducing generators, etc. So if I'm going too slow, let me know. Okay, so can I write here? So close to the identity, if we rotate, for example, if we consider SO3, so let's consider SO3 for now. You have some small rotation. We have some matrix parameterized which describes some small rotation. Okay. I recall that this is a vector. The magnitude and direction are related to the axis of rotation and angle. Of course, the other way around. It's equal to the identity matrix plus some contribution, which I call I d theta, this vector dot j. Now, what is J? Well, J, by definition, is the derivative of D. So where J is equal to, and with this I that I put, I have a minus I derivative with respect to, let me write the component JA, derivative with respect to theta A, D of theta, okay, with theta equal to 0. Okay? Please tell me whether this is completely clear or not. So I'm just expanding, I mean, of a small rotation, it's d theta dot x. So d theta 1, j1, where j1 is derivative of d of theta with respect to theta 1, etc. Right? Just an expansion of the gradient. Now, for example, we saw that the rotations d, for example, along some d theta ez, some angle ez, let's write theta, some theta ez, were equal to cosine theta, it's exactly what we have there, sine theta, minus sine theta, cosine theta, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0. Okay? Put an I so that the generators will be Hermitian when the representation is unitary. So it's just a question of convention. If you want, you can. You don't need to put the I. If you don't put the I, then you will not put the I here. It's a question of convention that you define the generators always with an I, and the generators will be Hermitian matrices when the representation is unitary. For example, for the rotation, you parameterize e to the I theta, an angle, right? And theta is a real number. You don't parameterize e to the theta. Of course, you can parameterize e to the theta, but then theta is a complex number. Okay? Yes. Yes. Sorry?
The ones in the algebra will be Hermitians. The ones in the group, yeah, they are unitary. They are here unitary matrices, FSU3 and FSON, they are orthogonal matrices. And then this condition translates into some condition for the generators. Right? But we will get there. Yes?
What was J?
What is J?
Yeah.
J is defined there. If you have some representation, you expand it around some small angle, you get 1, because if the angle is small, you don't rotate at all. Right? Plus some expansion of the representation. This is derivative. It's just Taylor expansion of D. Right? Okay, good. So, of course, this is equal to 1 when theta is very small plus 0 theta minus theta, 0.
These are thetas, the other are zeros, which is 1 plus I theta times 0 minus I 0 I 0 0 0 0 0. So we see that this guy here is what we would call J with index Z, the Z component, or J with index 3, the third component, or the JZ component of the JZ component of this J. Right? I would expand it and I took the derivative with respect to the theta, the third component of theta. Okay? Okay, good. Now, this is here, I exemplified in this part here for SO3, this bottom part. But of course, what I said here is absolutely generic. I can have a group with some parameters. Here I had 3 thetas, but in general I can have more than 3. I can have, for example, in SO2, there is just 1. In SO more than 3, I would have d theta with more than 3 components, and of course, I could always define such generators. Okay? So, the setup of the groups which admit this kind of which are included in this formalism, which have some expansion around the origin with some continuous parameter, are what are called Lie groups. Okay? So, Lie groups are these continuous groups which depend on some parameters for which we can define these generators. Now, how can we try to get a finite transformation knowing only the JAs? So you only know the infinitesimal, you only know how to get away slightly from the origin. How could we try to get some finite transformation if I would just give you these small J's? Okay? Can someone tell me? How do you imagine doing though?
Add up a lot of small ones.
Exactly. Okay, I add up lots of small ones. That's a good. Indeed, that's the physical way of saying it. That's a geometrical way of thinking it. How should I do it in practice? Yes. Okay, the exponential. So, but let me motivate the exponential map. It's true, indeed. The way you do it is by exponentiating. But a priori, you might be a bit confused. What tells you that the exponential is still a representation? How would you know that by exponentiating you still get a representation of the group? If I just give you the J's, if I just give you how the elements get away from the identity, how would you know that the exponential still defines the representation? Now, one way of thinking of it is to say that, okay, if I have some finite transformation, let me do it in the following way. Let me write it as 1 plus, let me write it as a small angle, I theta dot J over N. Okay? So this is a very small angle. And I raise this to the power N. Okay? Now, this guy here is a representation. He is an element D of G. By construction, we said I gave you the J such that around theta, D of G is given by 1 plus the expansion. So if n is very large, let's take the limit when n goes to infinity, this guy here is an element of D of G. But given 2 elements of D of G, I know that the second element, that the product of them is an element of D of G. So we expect that this is also an element of D of G, And this is, of course, nothing but the definition of the exponential. Okay? This is how one way we can argue that indeed this exponential map should give us a representation, finite representation of the group. Because in the limit when n goes to infinity, we are indeed multiplying elements which are in the representation of the group. Okay? And a very instructive exercise, but I don't know if you did it already, is to exponentiate, for example, this case and see that we get indeed the rotations of SO3. Did you do it with Nima? No? I'm almost sure you did. You introduced a matrix capital I, which was such that I squared was equal to minus 1. No? Okay, should I do it? Or do you think it's more like, or would you know how to exponentiate that matrix to get the rotations? Who would like me to do? Okay, good. So let's check that R, that this D of theta Ez is equal to exponential of I theta Jz. Okay? So exponential of I theta Jz is defined also, it's equivalent to defining it through the set, through the Taylor series. So I sum k equal 1 up to infinity, 1 over k factorial, I theta to the k, Jz to the k. K equals 0. Thank you. Yeah, k equals 0, of course. Which is equal to 1 plus sum of k odds of the same stuff plus sum of k even and bigger than 0 of the same stuff. Okay? Just decomposing. Now, the claim, what we will see, is that this part will become just 0 sine of theta minus sine of theta. And this part will become just cosine of theta minus 1, 0, 0, cosine of theta minus 1, 0, 0, 0, 0. Okay? So when I add, and of course this one means the 3 by 3 identity matrix, right? So of course when I add these three, indeed, I reproduce the rotation matrix. Okay, so let's check one of them. For example, let's check, right? So this guy here, the first one is 1, 1, 1. So the sum of these three terms works. So let me check, for example, only this one because all the other ones are simpler than this one. So let's check this one. So Jz, this third component of this generator is 0 minus I 0. Let's compute a couple of powers to see what's the pattern. Jz square, if I multiply it, I have this times this, so I get 0, 1, 1, 0. No, sorry. Okay, do you agree that Jz square is this? Yeah? It's obvious, right? Jz squared, I just multiply I times minus I is 1. So it's the identity. So Jz cube is equal to Jz again. Okay? Because I multiply Jz squared by Jz, and here I have the identity. Okay? So it means that jz to the 2n plus 1 is equal to jz. Okay? Therefore, that term here, let's call it, as usual, my favorite symbol. So, that stuff over there is equal. So, the matrix part is always proportional to Jz, because all the powers are just Jz. And then, there is a sum over the odd case of what? Of 1 over k factorial I theta to the power k. Okay? But this stuff is nothing but the Taylor expansion of I times sine of theta. This is just the expansion of I times sine of theta. Okay? So this proves what we want. So it's I times sine of theta times the times Jz gives precisely this matrix here. Okay? So is it clear how you would prove this one? You would consider the odd ones, the even ones. The even ones, Jz is always the identity. So that's why indeed that one gives diagonal terms. Right? Jz is just 1, 1 here. And then you would see that the sum just is the Taylor expansion of cosine minus 1. Okay? Yeah? Now, Lie groups have a very important property, which is the generators of Lie groups. So a very important property is that the generators of Lie groups form a commutator algebra. Okay? What does this mean? What does this mean? It means, in other, this is equivalent to saying that there exists some numbers, F, A, B, C, which are called structure constants. Constants such that the commutator between two generators, JA and JB, okay? Where what does a commutator mean? Okay, it's JA, JB minus JB, JA, of course. Is a linear combination of the generators, and the coefficients are precisely the structure constants. So if I commute two small J's, I get a third J. Okay, this is a property of Lie groups. We will see in 1 second that it must be there. It's non-trivial. If I would tell you that J's are the derivatives, are the ways the elements deviate from the origin. It's the ways the representations deviate away from the origin. Now commute two of them, you get another derivative in some other direction. A priori, it's not obvious. I could get some other matrix here, which would not be in my original set of matrices. But I'm telling you, if you commute Jx and Jz, you get a linear combination of the three Js. And you must always get a linear combination of the generators. Okay? This is a property of Lie groups. We'll see in 1 second why. But let's first check that indeed for SO3 this is the case. Okay? So we will understand why is this statement true. You know it if you practice the bit already with some groups like SO3 and SU2. You know that it is indeed true. Let's see it explicitly, that it is indeed true. But we will see the deeper reason for why it is true in a moment. I think that Nim already mentioned briefly what is the reason. For example, for SO3, okay, you know that the commutation relations are jx jy equal I jz jy jz equal I jx and jz jx equal I jy. In other words, you have JA with JB is equal to I epsilon ABC, the antisymmetric tensor, times JC. Okay, so this, I think everyone knows this, right? And this is more or less clear for everyone. Another way of seeing this, let me say, a way of proving this. Of course, a simple way is just plug this matrix into Mathematica and multiply them and check that indeed they have these commutators. It's maybe the most straightforward way. Another way, which I want, because I want to mention a nice property of these generators, is that if you think these generators J, for example, the JZ, which is written there, they can be written the following way. The generator JA, the elements IJ, okay? It's also given, it's fun, by this epsilon symbol here. And we'll see later that this is actually something deep. It's nothing but minus I times epsilon AIJ. Now, of course, let me emphasize that this A here tells you which generator. Okay? And these here are the matrix entries. Of that generator. Okay? So indeed, this is true if you see JZ only has entries which are non-zero, which are the entries 1, 2, and 2, 1. And indeed, 1, 2, 3 is given by minus I. Okay? Is it clear for everyone that, for example, for the JZ written there, this is true? JZ, if I put here the number 3, the only components which are non-zero are 1, 2, and 2, 1. And 3, 1, 2 gives, should give 1, and indeed the element there is minus I. And 3, 2, 1 should give minus 1, and the element there is indeed I. Okay? So this is exactly what I wrote there for JZ. And for the other ones, it's true. And then there is a nice identity for epsilon symbols, which you can use then to write this explicitly in components, which is, we can a way of proving this is by using the fact that the generators are given by this form, and the fact that epsilon ijk epsilon jmk is equal to delta ij delta lm minus delta I have a typo here, so I will randomly choose the indices, and you can later check if this is correct. Good. Okay. It should be, yeah, I think it is correct. Yeah, ij k m l. Yeah, this should be okay. Okay, and this is a simple identity that you can check also by just thinking about the anti-symmetry properties of the left and right hand side. Sorry? Thank you. Okay. Good. But now, here let me notice something curious. For now it's a curiosity. Let's write here as a curiosity. I think, yeah, today we will see that it's in one blackboard it will no longer be a curiosity, but curiosity. A curiosity is that J, A, is given by the structure constants. Something fun, that the components of JA are given by this epsilon, which is precisely the structure constant of SL3.
In the first term with the deltas on the right, are the indices correct?
There is a sum over k, of course, right?
Yeah.
I think it should be delta I L delta J
delta
M.
J.
Ah, of course, yeah. Yes, good, thank you. Because if I and J are the same, of course, this quantity here is zero. So, and so I and J cannot be the same. Okay, let's prove this relation. J L. So I and J cannot be the same from the left-hand side. Because if I and J are the same, I get zero. So I should have something which is anti-symmetric in I and J. So I have here I and J minus the same thing where I and J were just exchanged. So it is anti-symmetric in I and J. It should also be anti-symmetric in M and K. And it is in M and L. And it is indeed. I have M and L, and this one here is the exchange of M and L. So it's also anti-symmetric in M and L. And furthermore, if I and J are 1 and 2, L and M must be also 1 and 2, or 2 and 1, because K must be 3. Right? So if I and J occupy the numbers 1 and 2, K must be 3, and therefore L and M must also be 1 and 2, or 2 and 1. And let's see, if I and J are 1 and 2, I and J are 1 and 2 here, then there are two possibilities. Either L and M are 1 and 2, or L and M are 2 and 1. Otherwise, I get zero. So indeed, it has anti-symmetric properties of the other side, and it is non-zero when it is. And then I just need to check one value, which is, for example, 1, 2, 1, 2. And then I have 1, 2, 1, 2. I should have minus sign. So minus plus. And now this identity is correct. Okay? So it has the anti-symmetries of both sides. And it is true at one given value. And all the values are related by anti-symmetry, as I showed. Okay? Good, so this is how you prove this kind of identity. You write something, it has the same anti-symmetric properties, you check it at one value. Good, so we have two curiosities right now. We have two facts to explain, something which you can think of two coincidences for now, which is one, that the commutator of J's is equal to a J again, and the other curiosity is that somehow we use the stretcher constants and we got some JA. So I want now to explain again that this is completely general, that given two J's, I always get a third J. And I want to explain that there is also something to be said about defining representations using the structure constants. For some of you already know that, of course, I'm aiming at the adjoint representation. Okay. So, one more thing I want to add to this formula is that this is, if you want the definition, of Lie algebra. Okay, Lie algebra is you have a set of operators, a set of generators, JA, JB, and they obey this algebra. You commute two of them and you get a linear combination of a third one. Okay. Now, I want to claim that the Lie algebra property, which we checked explicitly, is there for SO3. The Lie algebra property is a consequence, is implied by continuity of the group. The fact that we have a continuous group implies that the generators must obey this algebra. So it was no coincidence, it ought to be like this. Okay? So to see this, to explore the continuity, let's consider two elements close to the identity. So let's consider two small rotations. Two small transformations. We don't want to be specific transformation. Okay, so thetas now are not angles, they are parameters which parameterize the transformations. And let's consider a product of two of them, e to the I theta j times e to the I theta prime dot j, where this theta and this theta prime are small. Okay? And this is just matrix multiplication. Yeah, they are just two matrices, I exponentiate and I multiply them. Now, because of continuity of a group, this is another element. right? So this is equal, and here is where I am using continuity. This is equal to e to the I some other theta prime prime dot j. What is theta prime prime? Is someone going to tell me what is theta prime prime? Let me ask, is theta prime prime equal to theta plus theta prime? Is it in general too that theta prime prime is equal to theta plus theta prime? No, because in general, the exponential of A times exponential of B, when A and B are matrices, is not exponential of A plus B. Right? So I don't have the right to add up the exponents. Right? So I want to keep this blackboard. Okay. So e to the a times e to the b is not equal to e to the a plus b.
Why does continuity imply that? Shouldn't it be just the property of the group that you can think of course to the elements of the group where you get the third one?
But if you want, you are saying that given two, that you have this notion of continuity that you can think of this as continuous parameters. You have two small infinitesimals, you combine two infinitesimals and you get the third infinitesimal, which is still an element. So we are going to expand and collect power by power that relation. And to expand and collect power by power, we are saying that it's true as a continuous relation, so that the several powers of that relation must hold. Right? It's like comparing two functions. If two functions are the same, the Taylor expansions of them are the same. If they are just the same at the point, I get almost no information. Right? It's exactly the analog of this. Instead, what we get from there is that if I expand, I get that theta prime prime dot j is equal to leading order theta dot j plus theta prime dot j plus, I'm just expanding those exponentials using the definition of what an exponential is, and then solving that equation perturbatively, plus I over 2 commutator of j of theta dot j comma theta prime dot j plus etc. Okay. What does this equation give us? So let's compare the components of this JZ. So this tells you that theta prime prime A is equal to theta A plus theta prime A plus. And now here, we notice something. So here, this only makes sense if indeed, where is the relation? If this relation holds. I need this to be proportional also to J to be able to solve this equation. And when it is, what I get is that I get theta A plus theta prime A plus F A B C theta B theta prime C plus dot dot dot. Okay. Otherwise, I was getting some impossible equation to solve. Okay. So I just expanded here again. So I just expanded this term, collected the I just solved perturbatively that equation by just expanding and truncating and treating it as a polynomial. Okay? So this is a very important and general relation. It tells you how to compose to leading order two small transformations. Okay? So it's almost the sum of the two, but then there is this term which tells you about how to get away from the origin. Okay? Good. For example, for SO3, for rotations, this tells you a very nice relation, which is that, by the way, I forgot, here I wrote a wrong sign, sorry. Plus I over 2. There was this I over 2 which I forgot here. For SO3, for example, it tells you that the angle of rotation after you compose two rotations, it's theta plus theta prime plus 1/2 of theta vector times theta prime. It's a nice... Yeah. Sorry? Yeah, so here there can, here probably, let me see. Theta. No, this is okay. So here. Okay, of course, here I. So if there is an I, and there, if this was defined with an I, then there is no I here. Now I know that this is wrong. I'm positive that this is wrong. I know that thetas are real and f's are purely imaginary. So the exercise is to look for the I. It was okay how I wrote the first time. Now it's wrong. There is some I which I'm not seeing, but it's a good exercise for you to review the notes and look for the. Just try to find, do it carefully and find out where the I is missing. For example, for this relation, I want that the angle is theta plus theta prime plus 1/2 of the vector product. I don't want to put an I here, right? I mean, everything is real. It's just two axes of rotation. So here there is no I for sure. Therefore, here I want an I because F was I times epsilon AB. No, F was just epsilon AB. So it was okay. Sorry. So I think I'm happy after all. So F was epsilon AB, right? Ah, yeah, the I was already there. Good. So F, this is not wrong. This is correct. Great. Right? Is everyone happy? Or is everyone thinking that the I is missing? I hope no one thinks an I is missing. Very good. Now, let's stop for a while. What we did so far was basically using some representation. We picked some representation. And we derived this relation. We derived this relation using some representation. And we derived this relation using some representation. But now, notice, of course, that this equation... or the last one in the case of rotations, is just the multiplication table. It's an extremely important point. This just tells you, give me two elements which parameterize the group, how do I get a third element? This is just a multiplication table, nothing to do with representations. Right? You just give me, I give you a small angle theta x, a small angle theta y, and I will tell you. Okay, so then the total rotation is a bit of theta x, a bit of theta y, and the update of theta z, which is the product of theta x with theta y according to this. So this tells you, given two elements parameterized by theta and theta prime, how to get the third one, right? So this gave us this theta prime prime, which was nothing but theta composed with theta prime. Right? So this just gave us a multiplication table, how to combine two elements close to the identity. So of course, this is independent. Independent of the representation. Okay? So these FAB are extremely important. They encode the multiplication table directly. Okay? So this FAB, FABC, are directly related to the group multiplication table. So they are a property of the group and not of the algebra, not of the representation. Right? So if you give me a multiplication table, if you give me rotations, forget about matrices or whatever. You just give me rotations and you tell me how to rotate when you give me an axis and an angle of rotation. Then I look at your table and I deduce this relation here, right? This is just a multiplication table for small rotations. And therefore these f's that I will read from this relation are just something which depend on the group, just on how to compose relations close to the identity. Okay? So FABC must be the same for any representation. Okay? So the problem of finding, in this language of Lie groups, finding a representation is mapped to the problem of finding algebra generators JA such that this relation holds. Okay? So if I tell you I want to study representations of SO3, I'm telling you, find me matrices for which this representation holds, for which obey this algebra here. Okay? Now, you might wonder whether this is a necessary or whether it is a sufficient condition. Yes? Okay, yeah, so if I change the definition of my J by 2, what I mean by same is that linear transformation, I can put them to be the same.
But what about if you have, if the representations are of different dimensionality, you can't have a linear transformation between vector spaces with different dimensions.
Now you are confusing something. When you have the generator, say, of SO3, the A index is always 3. It's always x, y, or z. What I have here, if this matrix are 9 by 9, I don't care. I have 9 by 9 matrix times 9 of 9 matrix is equal to 9 of, by 9 matrix. Right? Notice that this A, B, and C are indices which run from 1 to the number of generators of the group. This is something physical. Right? It tells me in a group, you have, for example, in SO3, three directions to go, x, y, and z. Right? And if you use higher representations, these are 9 by 9 matrices, but that's not an issue. Right? I have 9 by 9 matrices which obey this algebra here. Okay? What I'm telling you is that the matrices that you create, if you study the infinitesimal, what I'm telling you is that, for example, consider the tensor representation that we studied. Consider infinitesimal transformations, okay? Which have this meaning, transformation along x, y, and z. Right? then they must obey this algebra. They must, right? So if you consider a small x rotation, a small y rotation, a small z rotation for this matrix 9 by 9, then these generators obey for sure this algebra, because this is just a property of the group. Right? Is it clear for everyone? Okay, let me not skip anything. Okay, so, and this is actually FABC is all we need even for finite transformations. Let me put many exclamation marks, because it's highly non-trivial. Because we saw that it was okay, if you give me the FABs, I can get your rotation to quadratic order. But now I'm telling you that for any order, if you give me the Fs, I can reconstruct completely the multiplication table, finite multiplication table. If you give me the Fs, I can tell you two finite rotations, how they combine into a third one. Why? Okay. So the statement we are making now is that in a finite, maybe not the full space, but in a finite region, not infinitesimal, finite region around the identity, the FABC are equivalent, giving the FABC are equivalent to giving the full multiplication table. And the reason is because e to the a times e to the b, which is what we need to conjugate two groups, is equal not to e to the a plus b. It's possible to correct this relation, though, and the correction is, and this you saw in Ima's talk, it's some sort of BHC formula or something like this, BHC, or BHC. Becker, whatever. 1/2 of commutator of A and B, it doesn't stop, of course, plus 1/12 of commutator of A with A and B, plus 1/10 of commutator of A with B with B, plus dot dot dot. Okay? So if we know how to commute 2 into a third one, you see, if you know how to commute A with B, because it's just given by S, you also know how to compute this one, because A with B gives some F times J, and then J with J gives another F. So this term here will give something with some F, this term here will give something like a product of two Fs, etc. So if you know how to commute generator JA and JB, A is, of course, by A and B, I mean here always a linear combination of generators. I know how to compute this exponential completely. I just need to know how to compute the commutators. If a commutator gives again an algebra element, if they form a commutator algebra, then I know how to compute it to arbitrary order. Okay? Good. So, again, finding irreducible, for example, representations of a group is mapped to finding irreducible algebra generators which obey this property here. Okay, so let's stop here and resume in 10 minutes. Please, since Babak didn't approve that I didn't have surveys, so I prepared again some surveys, because now we are doing group theory, so I think it might be useful to see again if I'm going too fast. There is again one for the first and one for the second, so please help me see how fast I'm going.